My plan was to catch the 10 o'clock train from Salinas to Santa Barbara, seeing as I had no car and a few problems to deal with there. It is never convenient to be without a car in California, but I was pretty sure I would be able to borrow my grandfather's Honda station wagon once I arrived, and Bert Lampe would pick me up. Though I had to leave suddenly, the timing was good, as I'd been living in a motel for the past 3 weeks and was looking for a good excuse to quit my job. You might say the Santa Barbara crises had been timed perfectly for my circumstances. Extricating myself from Santa Cruz, the site of my most recent failures, was very welcome, actually a relief. So I took a bus to Watsonville, transferring to another that would take me through Castroville to the station, and seeing as how chaotic things had been recently, the thought of being a passenger with nothing to do for the day but sit still while in motion was something to look forward to. Even so, I was on edge. After all, I'd be facing two unpleasant situations through which great anger was sure to be directed at me. I was used to being the object of anger, especially recently, but that didn't make it any easier. Adding to my general unease were thoughts of what I was leaving behind. In the past 24 hours, I'd abruptly left my job, burning a bridge that I was happy to cross for the last time, and I'd confronted my husband, Sherman. I know all about Bebe Sinatra and the cocaine. True, I took the cowardly way and wrote emails, but they were masterpieces of obfuscation. In no way did they reveal the depth of my disgust at what precipitated this rupture. They were the whimper rather than the bang at the end of my world, but I could not move forward if I were to permit myself the full brunt of my feelings. As the bus neared Salinas, I started to breathe evenly. A hair glinted on my sleeve. I pulled it off and let it fly out the slightly opened window into the fields of Brussels sprouts and artichokes flanking the highway. A rotten smell, like that from the neglected vegetable bin at the bottom of my last refrigerator, was blowing in. Despite the fact that I was finished with Sherman, I wondered where he was and what he was doing, and if I'd always wonder, no matter how humiliating the final days of our time together. For instance, last month, pouring Sherman's dirty clothes into the washer, I discovered a slightly worn pink thong. "Yuck, what's this?" I said. "Oh, I found a bag of stuff at a bus stop. Thought maybe you might like it." Repulsed, I held up the abbreviated scrap. "But the back part went up somebody else's buttock crevice."
"Can't you just say crack like everybody else?" Sherman said with disgust, peeling back yet another layer of his true feelings toward me.
"Sure. Whose crack was it anyway?"
Nothing but anguish would compel me to say a thing like that. Eventually, I boarded the train and settled in. Just after the Zephyr left the station, the train door whooshed open, ushering in a cloud of patchouli oil and the sound of jingling metal objects. A woman came up the aisle and purposefully took the seat across from me. Small brass bells and coins had been sewn onto her billowy patchwork skirt. She then made eye contact and asked if I'd like to have my palm read for $20. $20 was a lot to me, but there I was, heading off into a great unknown. Once I dealt with the issues in Santa Barbara, my future was up for grabs. I was like the strand of hair blowing out the window, uprooted, alone. If ever there was a time I might want my palm read, this was it. So I agreed to it, and she took my right hand and began to study the fleshy side, tracing her finger along some of the lines. At last she said, "I can see that in your past lives, you experienced many episodes of aggression. Here," she pointed to a place where two creases intersected, "I can see that you were once beheaded and also strangled." She looked up to gauge my reaction. Because I'm accustomed to disguising my feelings, she saw no reason not to press on.